Montana is trending in the wrong direction when it comes to elder abuse. According to the Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services, a record 4,500 Montanans were victims of elder abuse in 2020, an increase of nearly 30% since 2018. In this edition of Fraud Watch Friday, Tom and Montana AARP President Al Ward are joined by former San Diego County Prosecutor Paul Greenwood to discuss the nature of elder abuse, how it can often be overlooked and underreported, and the steps that are currently being done to bring this troubling trend to a halt. This is a jam-packed discussion with tons of important information, both for those most at risk of elder abuse and for the friends, families, and communities of these targets for abuse. Those who suspect a case of elder abuse, neglect, or exploitation can call Montana's Adult Protective Service at 1-844-277-9300 or go to www.aps.mt.gov. Thanks for checking out the podcast and enjoy this edition of Fraud Watch Friday.
Alex Ward is with us, AARP State President of Montana. It's Fraud Watch Friday, sponsored by AARP. But the topic today, Alan, thanks. Good to see you. I hope you're doing good.
It's good to see you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a month.
Yeah, it's been a little while. Yeah, we'll have to catch up a little bit. I know that this is a topic that's near and dear to your heart, and we'll get some facts and figures out there as well. But your initial thoughts before we welcome Paul Greenwood, too, who's a former federal prosecutor. I should mention that right off the bat, and then you can welcome him. Head of a large elder abuse protection unit for 22 years, prosecuted a lot of felony cases, and just really is kind of the cream of the crop, top of the level when it comes to folks who are engaged and knowledgeable about elder abuse. So Paul's going to be on in just a second, but Al, start us off.
And Paul's not a stranger to Montana.
No.
He's been here quite a few times, and AARP keeps bringing him in because he really knows what he's talking about.
Well, in fact, something we'll get to, too, is a project that he's working on here with the state. But with that, Paul, how you doing?
Good. Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Alex. Nice to be with you.
It's good to hear you, Paul.
Elder abuse. I mean, if I say elder abuse, what comes to your mind? What do you say? Guy's been fighting it for years and years.
Right. Oh, first of all, Tom, I got to just say, I wasn't a federal prosecutor. I was a county prosecutor in the district attorney's office in San Diego County. But, when I came into this area back in 1996, I knew nothing about what elder abuse was. I had my preconceived ideas, but those were blown out of the water. It covers a whole variety of different conduct from obviously, the worst of the worst, homicides, sexual assaults, targeting elders for their money, financial exploitation. But it also covers neglect by caregivers, by loved ones. It covers mental abuse by using horrible words, by harassment, and emotional abuse. So it really covers the gamut of different types of behavior. And over the 22 years that I was privileged to prosecute these cases, I can honestly tell you, Tom, fact is stranger than fiction. Some of these stories you just literally cannot make up.
Wow. I believe that. I read something, and I'm going to kind of summarize it here down the road from AARP that talked about some of these specific kinds of stories. And they create, like you said, it runs the gamut of the types of abuse. But there's also, it runs the gamut, I think, of emotions that are involved because a lot of it's family members.
It is. Unfortunately, the majority of the defendants that I prosecuted for elder homicides were sons. And these sons have a classic profile. And they live in Montana. They live everywhere. You know, they're literally between 35 and 55, living with their widowed mother. 99% of them are lazy. They're mooching off their mothers. And they have an addiction to either drugs, alcohol, or gambling. And because they don't work, they steal from their mother. So they steal the mother's jewelry, take it to the local pawn shop. When mother finds out, she confronts her son. There's an argument. And that's when the violence begins. And, you know, here's part of the problem, Tom. You mentioned that figure of, in 2020, 4,500 Montanans were victims of elder abuse. That is the number that's been reported. The actual number, we have no clue what it is. It's probably at least four times larger than that, because many of my victims were too embarrassed, too afraid, to actually report it. We actually found out about the crimes of elder abuse from neighbors, from mandated reporters, from the nurse at the ER hospital, from the paramedic, or from the mail carrier. So that's why a program like today, Tom, is so important, because we're reaching so many people who could actually be the ears and eyes. And maybe, just maybe today, somebody will pick up the phone and actually call Adult Protective Services because they've had this nagging concern about an elderly neighbor.
Well, and that's, you know, such an important point, is the fact that the numbers that we give are numbers that we see. And it's estimated that for every reported case, there are 23 other cases that aren't reported.
That's right.
Wow. And there's a financial toll, obviously, to the victims. There's a moral toll, I think, to society, a financial toll as well. Let's define elder abuse then, because if you're talking about 4,500 cases and four or five or whatever times unreported, what do we know? What is elder abuse?
Well, the classic cases involve some form of physical harm, slapping, pushing, hitting. That, you know, then there's the mental abuse, so the constant haranguing, harassing, swearing at, intimidation of an older adult. And in Montana, we in some of the codes, we define an elder as anybody over the age of 65. And then, of course, there's a whole variety of different financial exploitation, people being ripped off every single day. Now, when we think of financial exploitation of elders, we immediately think of scams, right? The grandma scam, the IRS scam, which we all get bombarded with. But there are more subtle forms of financial exploitation. It could be your own lawyer. It could be your realtor. It could be your member of your clergy. It could be your next door neighbor. Somebody somewhere is looking at you going, you got some money. I think I'm going to find a way to get hold of some of that.
One of the things that we should move into as well is we're talking with Paul Greenwood here and Al Ward. Al Ward is AARP's state president for the state of Montana, and Paul, former county prosecutor, as he had mentioned, but working on this, and we'll get to that too, for the state of Montana, a project to expand the elder justice councils in the state. And I think that's a positive move in the right direction. I want to hit on one thing too about elder abuse, and that's passive neglect, because that's one of the things here that's listed on this tip sheet from AARP Montana. And that's another one of those things that we don't talk about an awful lot, or it might be real hard to spot what passive neglect is.
Yes, and that's why we all have a duty to step up and look out for people who are older, who are housebound, who, particularly because of the pandemic, have become very socially isolated. You know, before long, you know, they may have difficulty in getting medicine, medications, getting errands from the stores, food, and sometimes you end up with horrendous scenes of older adults literally in their own beds, covered in feces, urine, there's maggots, there's bed sores. You know, anybody who's treated an older adult who's bedbound knows that typically you have to turn them every 2 to 3 hours, because if you don't, there's a huge risk that by laying in one position for more than 3 hours, their skin is going to deteriorate, and you end up with these horrible decubitus ulcers, which ultimately can end up in the person's death. So that's why we all bear a responsibility, sons, daughters, grandchildren, caregivers. We all have a duty to make sure that this passive neglect doesn't get out of hand.
But one of the things also, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more, but the other part of it is social isolation. You mentioned that as a result of the coronavirus. But one of the things that abusers or people that are actually violent to their loved ones do is isolate them. They move them away from their friends. They move them away from the things that they do every day so that they're totally dependent on the person who's actually victimizing them.
That's so true, Al. And that is one of the prominent red flags that we try to educate people about. And that's why it's so important that when there are men and women out there who actually have daily contact, so for example, the mail carrier could be the one person who could be the person to blow open a case of neglect or physical abuse of an older adult. So when the mail carrier notices that the older person is not being brought to the door, that there's somebody else who's taking the mail in, you know, these are all triggers that should make somebody more inquisitive. And we keep saying to people, if you have any concerns, you just make that call to your local adult protective services and let them make an unannounced visit to the home to see what's actually going on.
Well, Paul, and I think the thing that we have to talk about, we don't have a lot, we got 2 minutes in this segment, and maybe I'll save it for another segment, but the complexity of the problem when you're dealing with elder abuse in a family situation is intervening in there. One case in particular, and I should summarize it. I keep talking about it. Maybe I just will. Okay, I got a couple of minutes here, and I want to have you talk about it because it creates, and this is from the AARP's page from on scams and fraud, and was written by David Hochman, and talked about a situation here where for more than 30 years, this 84-year-old now operated a small beachside motel next to a triplex apartments that she had owned. She wanted to sell this apartment complex to her nephew, her great nephew, at great savings, $250,000 value, going for $50,000. There was a real estate agent that intervened in that, called foul. She sued. The state came in, and now they put this 84-year-old lady into state care. And now, and this, again, this is from a site on AARP. This is a real case. And I want you to come on back as we, again, have time to talk about some of these real cases. But to comment on this one, she can't see, you know, her family is limited in access to her. And she has now been put into an elder home. So the question is, you know, was there a violation of law in that circumstance? And the question is, did intervention make a big difference in this case? Now, there are other cases out there, but this one I thought was real interesting to spark the discussion, Paul, and we'll take a break now. I wanted to just lead into that about how we make a real difference when it comes to prevention in elder abuse without crossing those kinds of boundaries that are important to all of us when it comes to making sure our seniors can stay at home. So we'll take a break and come on back. Al Ward is with us in studio, Paul Greenwood as well, elder abuse prevention expert here today on Voices of Montana.
At the University of Montana, students learn as much under the big sky as they do on campus. UM students are tackling invasive species in the Flathead, workforce shortages in Billings, water rights in Great Falls, rural healthcare in Havre, wildlife in Yellowstone, pharmacy in Forsyth, and education in Alberton. Wherever we are, grizzlies leave their mark across Montana. Learn more at umt.edu. Up with Montana.
Brian Bennett with Headline News upcoming. It's Tom Schultz and Al Ward, Voices of Montana's Fraud Watch Friday, sponsored by AARP, and good to have Al in studio. Paul Greenwood is on the line, a former county prosecutor, worked at as the San Diego deputy district attorney, and headed up that elder abuse prosecution unit for 22 years. We got to talk about the prosecution of elder abuse crimes, and as we've seen that, maybe Paul, you've seen that progress over the past 22 years. But let's get back to that point and talk about the dichotomy that exists sometimes when you look at family situations, which are 60% of the abuse cases, and how complicated they can be. And use that one example there, if you would.
Sure. And you've hit upon a really tricky situation there. We all want older Montanans to feel like they can live their remaining years in as independently as possible, without interference, without being institutionalized by whoever. On the other hand, you've got well-meaning people looking out for older adults who say, hey, this person's being scammed, this person's being exploited, they need, quote, protection. And then you get into that whole area of, does this person need protection? And before you know it, sometimes there is a court application for this person to be what we call under a guardianship or a conservatorship. And then the court may appoint somebody to basically walk in the shoes of this older adult. And when that happens, it literally does strip the older adult of all their rights. Somebody else is now dictating where they live, who can see them, how much money they spend. And we've all heard the reports, for example, about the Free Britney campaign, Britney Spears, who was under a conservatorship in California for so many years. And look at the restrictions she was under. So there's a big debate going on right now with regard to whether a guardianship is good or bad. A lot of people are saying you should never be recommending a guardianship because of the risks involved. If it gets into the hands of the wrong person, it can destroy a person's life. On the other hand, some people need protection. So there's no easy solution to this, Tom. All I can say is that people need to be asking questions. People need to be pushing back. If they see, for example, an 84-year-old lady being warehoused and being blocked from seeing family members, that should immediately raise some alarm bells. And just because the court has ordered it doesn't mean that necessarily that it's right. Sometimes the court can be hoodwinked by the person that has been appointed to take care of somebody else's affairs. So it's a very complex, dynamic situation.
One of the things that's recommended here, or it says the lesson, is almost all guardianships can be avoided with advanced planning. Al, meaning what?
Well, meaning making sure that you have all of your paperwork in order as far as the things that you want to have happen, that you have a person that's going to be, responsible for the things that you want done, named by you.
There you go.
Rather than by the court, because a lot of times the court doesn't have time to do extensive backgrounds on the people that they appoint.
Power.
The other thing that I think is really important about all of this is that it's a quality of life issue. And, basically when we're looking at the, what's best for the senior, it's what's best for their quality of life.
And thank you, Al. And Paul, just to comment off of that as well, that's why I think education is important. Continued education, and that is part of an executive order that was issued earlier this year from the state of Montana that led to the expansion, or at least the expansion efforts, of the Montana Elder Justice Councils. And I know that you were appointed to be a part of that effort. Can you update us on that and talk about the importance of that? And then Casey, stand by. We'll go to your phone call in a bit.
Sure. It was a real honor that the Montana Adult Protective Services approached me last year to see if I could assist with trying to build up three new Elder Justice Councils and strengthen the existing Eastern Elder Justice Council. Because one of the things, Tom, I learned in the 22 years that I prosecuted these kind of cases was that when I stood in front of a jury and presented evidence, I was so aware that this would not have been possible were it not for the multidisciplinary team efforts of various professional agencies. And the one thing that I think we really can learn from is if we build strong communities of law enforcement, prosecutors, social services, hospitals, mental health counselors, first responders, nursing homes, all working together around the table, talking to one another, sharing information, the people that benefit most are older Montanans. So we are currently in discussions with the Lieutenant Governor right now about expanding the idea of the Elder Justice Council to North Central Montana, South Central Montana, and Western Montana. And next Friday, the 11th, we're going to be having our first sort of strategy planning meeting to make that come into effect. And once we get rolling, I can tell you this, there will be a conduit for sharing information. We'll get more prosecutors energized and engaged. We'll get more law enforcement trained to spot the red flags and basically try to create more education awareness campaigns like we're doing with this radio program.
And there's a report due as well that December 31st, 2022, so it's a year away. But I'm looking forward to that, too, and we'll talk more about that here in just a bit. Got to take a quick break, and then we'll come on back. Casey's got a comment, and you're welcome to call us here at 866-627-5483. Casey, thanks for that. Or you can text us a question at 781-627-5483. Paul Greenwood is with us here. As you heard him talk about prosecuted a lot of cases when it comes to elder abuse as retired now San Diego Deputy District Attorney. Al Ward's in studio. Here's Brian.
Did you know Montana has the highest rate of suicide in the nation? It's preventable. Get to know the warning signs: hopelessness, depression, isolation, and increased alcohol use. If you are concerned about a loved one, ask, are you suicidal? Offer hope. Stay with them. Contact a healthcare professional or call the Montana Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-TALK. Suicide is not what we want Montana to be known for. Brought to you by the Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services.
This is from a report from the Department of Health and Human Services that elder abuse in Montana up nearly 30% since 2018. As we're talking about that today, a lot of things we can do about it. Paul Greenwood is with us, a former county prosecutor, and also led a large elder abuse prosecution unit for plus 20 years and working on a Montana project. We'll talk more about Al Ward in studio. Let's get a phone call in here real quick. Break coming up in 3.5 minutes. Casey, listening in Great Falls on KQDI. Thanks, Casey. You're on the air here on Voices.
Yeah, I think your yes there is very wise and doing the right thing. But I have to also say that you have to use caution when you're in the bureaucracy who has oversight, because sometimes you can become too overbearing. And the persons who know the needs of the, especially the parents or the siblings, is the ones who are involved. And they have to have oversight, but it's a fine line there. I had to deal with my mother who had Alzheimer's, and to protect her against predators, and had my siblings involved too somewhat, but most of it fell upon my shoulders. And so it's a matter of conscience, a matter of judgment. And you can put some things in law, but everything cannot be in black and white. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Casey, a matter of judgment.
Thank you. Stand by. And Paul, you know, follow up on that, because that might make some people hesitant to possibly report what they see as elder abuse because of the infringement or sometimes the overzealousness of some of these agencies. And like we said about that situation.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point, Casey. And I'm so glad you picked up on the responsibility for someone like yourself, and bless you for taking care of your mother with Alzheimer's. You know, I really have tried to stress to sons and daughters that we have a responsibility to our aging parents, particularly when we see a cognitive impairment. This responsibility should not fall on government or on, as Tom says, some overzealous agencies. We have a duty to our parents to watch out for them, to be aware that there are resources out there that we can then take advantage of. And there are so many. And this is where AARP are so good at disseminating this kind of information. But I agree, it's a fine line between government getting involved, police agencies getting involved, social services, and family trying to alleviate and make the lifestyle for their elderly parent as comfortable as possible.
Well, but go ahead. Sorry.
No, please.
Well, we're coming up to a break here, and that's one of the reasons I think in Montana, the expansion of the Montana Elder Justice Council is important because you talk about all those different agencies, and if they're not communicating, and as we found that out over the pandemic, we're doing a better job of it, but we were not communicating very well at an interagency level. And so one of the functions here is to improve that communication. I'm going to talk more about that as we come on back, and then dementia care. You know, what kind of part that plays in prevention of elder abuse. Back with more Voices in a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
At Northwest Farm Credit Services, we're bullish on the future of agriculture. But getting into the business isn't easy. If you're looking to finance your dream, we're here to help you plant the seed. We help young, beginning, and small producers get started with educational opportunities, trusted advisors, and flexible financing options. So when you're ready to start growing your future, give us a call. Northwest Farm Credit Services, here to help you grow. Equal opportunity provider and employer, equal housing lender.
Paul, I appreciate your expertise here too. And Al Ward in studio, AARP State President from Montana. Al, I wanted to have you start by talking about, as we look at these elder justice councils, you remembered the work that Paul had done earlier that's very familiar.
Well, I think it's really interesting that I went to the first Eastern Montana Elder Justice Council meeting, and guess who was there?
Paul
Greenwood. but I know something of Paul's history, and I know that he put together FAST teams in San Diego, and they basically are the foundation of the Elder Justice Council. That's exactly what it is supposed to be. So, and I think, you know, he hit the nail on the head. Communities solve community problems, but you do it as a community. You don't just pigeonhole it to law enforcement or to the courts or to social services, or you got to get everybody involved that has an interest in the particular problem.
And we've learned that throughout this pandemic, as a matter of fact, too. Sometimes, though, too many cooks can spoil the brew. But Paul, talk about the creation of that FAST program and what it did and what we hope to accomplish with those elder justice councils in Montana.
Sure. So we brought together, obviously, key members from Adult Protective Services, law enforcement, my office. We brought in bank and credit union representatives. We brought in a forensic accountant. And we started to analyze different reported cases of suspected elder financial exploitation and sharing of information one with another. Using the, for example, getting somebody in who's a psychiatrist to explain the level of cognitive impairment that the victim may be facing, to then bring in the bank representative to tell us the pattern of behavior that's been going on over the last month or so, and then Adult Protective Services to talk about the home setting. You know, when we're sitting around the table, and in the last 2 years it's been primarily people virtually online doing it together, we're hearing information for the first time that maybe we would never have been able to use. And ultimately, what it does is provide such a great intelligence network for our community. And it often then leads to discovering more cases. So somebody may be sitting at the table going, wait a minute, what did you say that suspect's name was? Hey, I'm investigating that same guy for somebody else. And this often was the case. So, you know, when you're actually meeting with people, you build up this level of trust with one another. And I think what's very important, Tom, in any Elder Justice Council environment is to make it very clear that we're not there to point fingers. We're not there to look at across somebody and say, well, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Let's learn from lessons, but not accuse anybody, because people will get very defensive. But let's try to ensure that next time we'll do it differently. And I keep saying this, ultimately, who benefits? It's the older Montanan who will benefit from this.
What have you seen over your 22 years in prosecuting elder abuse?
enough to make me very skeptical, suspicious about human nature, to make me realize the role that adult children should be playing in their parents' lives. You know, too often, Tom, I would get calls from adult children, and I could tell straight away they're angry, they're upset. They've just discovered that their widowed mother has been ripped off by a caregiver or by somebody else, and that they start telling me all these things, and I interrupt them, and I say, excuse me, where were you when all this was going on? And they give me every excuse under the sun. So the 22 years taught me that we need to step up to the plate if we're adult children and be more interested and more concerned about our older parents' lives. Secondly, it's taught me that so often there are too many barriers and too many misconceptions that prevent valid cases from ever getting investigated and prosecuted. And thirdly, I've learned that education and awareness campaigns are the key. The more we can do this, the more we can share this information through a radio program, the chances are very high that we will be able to at least reduce the number of times when a predator is going to take advantage.
And that's become one of the major focuses of this Elder Abuse Council, as well as something that you'll be speaking as a keynote speaker to at the Montana Financial Education Coalition. Yeah, go ahead.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, this is going to be another webinar that we're going to be handling, thanks to AARP once again. And again, it is all about education. It's all about making people aware of what steps they can take to reduce the risk of becoming a victim of financial exploitation, whether it be from doing credit searches on yourself, whether it be from looking at how your mail is delivered, whether it be how you choose a caregiver, whether it be how you choose an assisted living to place a loved one in. These are all ways that we can learn how to better improve our own lives and the lives of the loved ones around us in order to reduce the risk that we become a victim.
As much as prosecution and medical procedures do not mix, when we talk about better dementia care for our seniors, has it mixed in any real way, or is it just the education that we need to continue with?
Certainly, the education. We need to all be more vigilant about cognitive impairment signs. When we visit people, when we go to their homes, are we seeing indicators that maybe there's some concern here for cognitive impairment? And, you know, with access, hopefully, to great medical resources, you know, there are more and more doctors, thankfully, are becoming more educated and aware about the various types of dementia. You know, they tell us there's over 24 types of dementia. I mean, we always think of Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is the number one type of dementia, but there are so many other forms too.
Yeah.
So as research gets better and as we have more doctors trained in dementia care and as we get better communities building up with memory care units, so I think we're going to hopefully be better off. You know, they tell us there's over 5 million people today, Tom, in America, just with Alzheimer's alone, which is kind of scary.
And they're definitely targets, you know, for people who would like to abuse them. Because for the most part, oftentimes they can't remember what happens.
I'm going to give a list here. How can elder abuse be prevented? Again, it's from this tip sheet from AARP. And I just want to have you comment on some of those things that might just stick out for you. But and there's more here, but the list is, you know, planning your own future, knowing your rights, staying active in the community, you know, opening and posting your own mail. Again, not giving out personal information, but using direct deposit for your checks, having your own phone, you know, all those things. What stands out there for you, Paul, is real effective?
I think sometimes the mail is key. You know, we got to make sure that our mail is not being tampered with, stolen. I think we also should be very cognizant about phones and make sure that we educate ourselves. Just because somebody's got a nice voice over the phone, don't give out any personal information whatsoever about yourself. And be very careful about what's posted on social media about yourself. And try to get your grandchildren not to say too much about you as an individual or post too much about yourself, because this is where the predators look. They look on Facebook. They look on Instagram. They build up profiles so that they have knowledge about who we are. So when they phone us, we actually think it's somebody that we should know already, and then we get lulled into a false sense of security and give them too much information.
We'll take a break and come on back and get – maybe an impression or something that still sticks in Paul Greenwood's mind as a former county prosecutor for a number of years and, again, head of a large elder abuse protection prosecution unit for 20-plus years, something that has continued to inspire him to work in this area. Al Ward's in studio with us here from AARP Montana, and back with more in a bit.
I'm Angela Cadell, Group Vice President of Agricultural Products for BNSF Railway. At BNSF, we recognize producers for their hard work and commitment to provide our nation's and the world's food supply. Farming is in our DNA, and we honor you with our long-term commitment of delivering your high-quality products to market safely and consistently, no matter the season. You can count on us. This is BNSF.
Fastest hour in radio, but I'm going to steal a little time here to talk about AARP Montana's community challenge grant applications. All right. These are where local organizations and even local governments across the state can apply for the grant programs that are available through the community challenge program with AARP. Yeah, and search for it. Okay. It's the community challenge grant program. AARP Montana applications are open. I think, Al, we did a show a little while ago about a grant program that led to an outdoor gym in a park in Helena, which was pretty cool. Al Ward is with us in studio, state president for AARP Montana. And you also have a storied career in law enforcement. And so along with Paul Greenwood, who's a former county prosecutor out of the San Diego, as a former San Diego deputy district attorney there. Paul, thank you. Al, thank you. I kind of want to get, before we forget, you and I had talked off mic about an area that you wanted to address, and that is the misconceptions about prosecutions out there. Is it getting harder? Is it getting, you know, what do prosecutions and convictions do in preventing elder abuse?
Right. Well, thanks for letting me share that, because one of the misconceptions actually is amongst prosecutors all over the country who think that prosecuting an elder abuse case is very, very hard. I totally disagree, because most of the victims have such massive jury appeal. And even when you've got victims who present some cognitive challenges, you can still, through them, bring out illicit testimony. And in fact, the forgetfulness that they show on the witness stand will actually strengthen so many of the cases, because jurors get it. They go, yeah, I can see why this guy targeted this elderly victim. Another misconception, Tom, is when family members will call into a police department and talk about a case, and the response from the police officer or the desk person is, that's just a civil matter. You need to go find a lawyer. And I have to be very diplomatic, because I have the greatest respect for everything law enforcement does, but what they're not good at is becoming lawyers. And when somebody says, that's just a civil matter, they are actually acting as a lawyer. And I'm saying, no, just gather the facts and submit those facts to the trained prosecutor's office, and they can make the determination whether it's civil or criminal. And then one other that I come across a lot is when a victim is a victim of a scam, and they have sent money to the perpetrator. And sometimes the police say, well, there's no crime here. I mean, there was no threats, there was no violence, so she did it voluntarily, or he did it with consent. I said, no, it's not consensual when somebody has been lied to and deceived. That is a crime. So the beauty of having these elder justice councils situated in Montana is it gives us opportunities to dissolve these misconceptions and commit with one another to try to do better to serve older Montanans all over the state.
Not sure I've left you enough time for this, Paul Greenwood, but a story. We've got about a minute, a full minute here. Leave us with something that sticks in your mind, sir.
What sticks in my mind is the generic cases of where I have pursued a prosecution against particularly a son who's been addicted to drugs, alcohol, or gambling, where the mother at the beginning did not want me to prosecute. She was very reluctant, very hesitant, in fact told me, begged me not to do it. But ultimately, when we convicted him, we got him into a program that was ordered by the court. 18 months later, the mother comes to see me and says, Mr. Greenwood, that was the best thing that could have happened to him. He's finally got it. He's finally broken free from his addiction, and we owe it to the system and to your office for that. And that thrills me and still thrills me. And now what's thrilling me, Tom, is the opportunity to partner with AARP and share the education, the Fraud Watch Network with older Montanans and elsewhere in order to try to reduce the risk of them becoming a victim.
Well, thank you for your work on that behalf. Also, Al Ward, thank you on that work, for your work on that behalf as well. Paul, we'll talk to you later, okay?
You betcha. Thanks, Tom. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Paul Greenwood.
Good talking to you, Paul.
Al Ward. Hey, you guys, like the man said, have a great weekend, everybody.